So we're moving to Romans. We're still in that section where he's giving a fairly general look at morality. Owe no one anything, says Paul, except to love one another. Well, you know where he learnt that. I've one commandment to give you, love one another as I have loved you. Because the one who loves another has fulfilled the law, the Torah. So it's fulfilled it. That's it. That's what it's all about. We don't know. We only know that because of Jesus. So a Christian, in other words, as I'm explaining it there, who lives a life of faith that bears fruit in love, an expression we can find in Galatians 5:6, that kind of person is living in obedience to God, which is the whole aim of the law. Paul said earlier, God sent his Son, chapter 8, verse 4, God sent his Son so that the just requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us, who walk not according to the flesh, not according to our own human desires that are closed to inspiration, but according to the Spirit. So if God is love and we live in accordance with the Spirit of love, our behaviour will be loving. And Paul goes on then to quote the commandments, as Jesus himself does in the story of the rich young man, you might recall. The commandments: you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. That's all from Exodus. And already here, the ninth and tenth commandment is often called, about coveting, it's really quite a mature advance on the law systems of the day, even right back as far as then. Because not only is it external behaviour that's here being told not to do, but coveting, it's about the heart, it's about longing, it's about desire, it's about attitudes as well. They can be wrong. So any other commandment, they're summed up in this word, love your neighbour as yourself. Leviticus 19:18. That same conclusion, of course, was drawn by Jesus himself, the first commandment, second commandment, etc. These bits of information here might interest you. Rabbi Hillel, who was one of the leading rabbis in Jerusalem when Jesus was a boy, assuming that Jesus came to Jerusalem on the feast, which is highly likely, when he was 12, he was obliged by law. He was an adult in the Torah, so he would have been obliged, if possible, to come to Jerusalem three times a year. So when he came to Jerusalem, he could well have met Rabbi Hillel, who was the leading rabbi of the day. Now, he's quoted as saying this: what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbour. This is the whole law. The rest is merely commentary. Go and learn it. So, the idea of love being central is not new to Jesus. He just happened to do it in an extraordinarily beautiful way. And here's Rabbi Akiba, who died at the second revolt of Jerusalem under Hadrian. In 135 AD, and he called the text from Leviticus, love your neighbour as yourself, the great summation of the law. So there are many beautiful Pharisees, you'd know that, expect that. There's many beautiful people in all classes of our world. There are many beautiful mullahs, and there are many beautiful ayatollahs, and there are many beautiful priests, and there are many beautiful, you know, everybody in the world, of course. Well, these men saw this. And Paul concludes, love does no wrong to a neighbour. Love is the fulfilling of the law. Then he goes on, verse 11. Besides this, you know what hour it is, how it is now the moment for you to wake from sleep. Salvation is nearer to us now than when we became believers. Paul still seems to be, and absolutely understandably, within a frame of reference where there's a heightened expectation of the imminent coming of Christ, the parousia. The resurrection's happened, the first fruits are up, the first fig is on the tree. Well, the rest of them are going to come pretty soon, the harvest is ready. So Jesus' resurrection led them, I would think inevitably, to think that the harvest is coming, the fulfillment is nearby, the new heaven and new earth are just round the corner, really, and we've got to work as fast as we can to draw as many people to know about it, to appreciate it as possible, because it's, well, it's, the hour is now here. The night is far gone, the day is near. Let us lay aside the work of darkness and put on the armour of light. Let us live honourably as in the day, not in revelling and drunkenness and debauchery and licentiousness and quarrelling and jealousy. No, put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. You know about St. Augustine, I hope. I hope you've all read his Confessions. If you haven't, do borrow it from someone and read it. It's a classic. It has to be read. It's a compulsory reading. It's the first kind of personal autobiography in our Western world literature. For that reason alone, it ought to be read. It's quite modern in its revelation of the person in writing one's confessions, one's spiritual biography, as it were. And in there, in Book 8, the 12th section, is that lovely story, which I'll tell you briefly, though I'd love to go into it more at length. Augustine's story, I'll have to take it, you know, and if you don't, I haven't time to do it now with you. But he's now in Milan, he's linked up with this wonderful bishop. He's not a Catholic Christian. He was fascinated by the black and white of a very fundamentalist group back in northern Africa at first, because young people often like clarity. They like to know yes and no, black and white, and you know, then they're certain, and it's all pretty understandable stuff. But so he hooked onto that for a while, but he was too intelligent to go along that track. But he didn't know where he was, and he was up there and he was fascinated by this bishop. He used to sit there listening to him. And one day he just read a story written by Athanasius, in fact, of the great St. Anthony of Egypt, the great 104 years he died. I think he was a monk living in the deserts of Egypt. And Athanasius knew him and wrote his, so it shows you, his biography, fascinated. And Augustine was outside in the garden crying, weeping, because he's got to the top of his career, everything was going fantastic, he was a rhetorician, he was in the university, couldn't go any further, he's only 34, but his life was empty, something was not there. We all know that feeling, I'm sure. And he was out there, fascinated by this monk, you know, who lived it really tough stuff. And he was kind of, said he was weeping in the garden, and he heard a little child, two little kids playing a little game out in the park. One of them was saying, "Tole lece," pick it up and read it. A little note, you know, like postman's knock we played as kids. And you're supposed to read what it says and then do it. And little kids follow the leader or whatever. He heard this little "Tole lece," and when he heard it, here in his ear, he heard something else in here. He heard, "Pick it up. Read it." His mother had given him the letters of Paul, but he kind of had it sitting on his shelf. But he couldn't get it out of his thing, so he goes home. Tole lece, pick it up and read it. And he went like this. I won't read what I read there because it might be too demanding of me. But when Paul opened it, that's the text he opened. The night is far... Imagine if you're in the dark and you're all dark inside and it says, the night is far gone. The day's near. Put aside all this. Put on the armour of light, like now. Don't... Put on the Lord Jesus. Well, with that, that kind of got right into his soul. So then he started to read Paul's letters. And then he went back and was baptised into the Universal Catholic Church and... went on, became the priest and a bishop, poor man, God bless him. And for about 40 years he was a bishop in North Africa, trying to keep... And he died with the Vandals attacking the city. You know, he lived at a terrible time of North African history, and a bishop in those days was it. You were the educator, you were the judge, you were the jury, you were this, you were ministering, you were looking after practical goods. And here you've got this wonderful mystic. But I really like that. You know what I mean? He didn't escape to a mountain. He lived in the real world he was in thoroughly with a beautiful spirit. But I wouldn't swap his life for the world, and neither would you. That's where it started. Well, it didn't start there. It started with grace, but that text has a historical interest for us, but it's good for all of us.